Hello and welcome to the latest edition of Women's Soccer Zone, episode 57. My name's Kieran Taven, back in a very grey and wintry London, joined as always by my good friend out in the United States, JJ Duke. JJ, how are you, mate?
Well, it's pretty grey up here in New England, so I'm kind of feeling you on that one. But yeah, otherwise pretty good.
I wish you well, mate, with the weather coming up, because I know that you guys get bad winters. We don't get it as bad as you. It's just very grey and very cold here. Lots to cover off in this episode of the show. We don't tend to do big introductions now. We tend to just wade straight in. And we should start with the FIFA Best Awards that took place at the start of this week. Of course, it took place in London at the London Palladium. The Women's Award and the Women's Coach Award were handed out. Lika Martins was the winner of the Women's Player Award, overcoming Carly Lloyd and Dana Castellanos. And for the Coaches Award, it was Serena Weigman, the Netherlands head coach. She finished ahead of Niels Nielsen and Gerard Precheur, the former Lyon coach. JJ, no real surprises with the two winners, but obviously disappointing that both of them were absent to receive their award, because this awards was arranged right in the middle of a FIFA international window for women's football. So players with their countries, that was very much evident when you looked at the audience, because very, very few women's football representatives there, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you look at it, how things are going about, especially, that was an event taking place in Europe. You were pretty much smack right in the middle of World Cup qualifying window. I mean, the Netherlands, they played the next day at home against Norway. They are just coming off of a friendly against Austria. So you can't really have too many European representatives. The U.S., they had their friendlies against Korea, earlier in that window. So that allowed Carly Lloyd, who obviously doesn't have a club to be playing for in the wintertime, so she's happy to go. And, actually, I'd be honest, a little bit surprised that Dana Castellanos is able to make it out, because of the fact that, well, she's got school and also matches with Florida State University. But with that being said, it was good to see two of the three there, but obviously you want the full set. And with the Netherlands, they're focusing on the tournament. You want them to be there and precedent and what's more important at the time. But yeah, I'm with you. These events, you want to see everybody there, because it's a once a year thing. It's the supposed big day for awards for FIFA, but when you don't have the winners there present and having to put in basically pre-recorded messages, that kind of says something.
Yeah, disappointing that Serena Weigman and Lika Martins couldn't be there. As you say, credit to Carly Lloyd for making the journey. I think she was straight out of Cary in North Carolina after the US's 6-0 win over South Korea. We're going to talk about that a little bit later, to jump on a plane and get over to London. Dana Castellanos, as you say, I think Florida State University actually had a game on Sunday, and I noticed that her name was not on the starting list for them, so I'm almost certain that she missed that game. I think what was most disappointing for me, yes, it was disappointing those two couldn't be there to receive their awards, but we've seen that multiple times where singers and actors and God knows who else can't be at big events to receive their awards. The biggest disappointment for me was when I looked at the audience whenever there was a camera that panned over them, I barely saw any women's footballers there. And we've already mentioned the fact that this was arranged during a FIFA international window, but that doesn't excuse coaches from club teams. That doesn't excuse retired internationals, retired players. I think from what I could tell, I saw Celia Sasic, I saw Alex Scott, and I saw Dana Castellanos and Carly Lloyd. I didn't see many more. And actually, there were a few conversations going on social media, and Chelsea ladies coach Emma Hayes, who was actually nominated for coach of the year. Didn't make the final three, but she did get into the final 10. Mate, she wasn't even invited.
Yeah, I mean, that's just horrific on FIFA. I mean, this was an event that was in London. I don't know the specifics. You obviously know, you know, how close it is in proximity to some major landmarks. But let's face it, it's in England. You could have invited at least, you know, a couple of the club coaches. I mean, hey, should, like, how the fact that she wasn't even invited says a lot. I mean, you know, if she's one of those that, like, had something previously scheduled, knew that she wasn't going to be in the top three, okay, you can understand that. As you said, we've had it with plenty of major, you know, award shows, not in sports, but in, you know, the movies and music where, you know, people can't make it. Okay, I get that. But surely FIFA could have found at least a dozen people or so of women's football players or women's coaches that could have made the event, and, you know, just a good representation of the women's game. But yeah, as you say, it's surprising, stunning, but at the same time, Kieran, I think this is kind of the struggle that we continue to see in this sport. It's that it's growing, but yet some parties just don't fully grasp the ideals of what we're all trying to think about.
Yeah, and that's, for me, the most disappointing thing. I was actually a big, and I'm happy to say it publicly, I was a big backer of Gianni Infantino. As far as I was concerned, he was, for me, in terms of the people that were leading the charge to replace Sepp Blatter, he was the person I kind of felt, do you know what, he seems the most honest, he seems the one with the most integrity. And I remember when he was voted in, he had an ex-players match in Zurich, and I know that Kelly Smith was invited and a few other ex-internationals alongside a lot of legends of the game from the men's side. And I know that he had conversations with the women's players there and said that he wanted to take women's football very seriously. He wanted to grow the game. He wanted to move it forward. I mean, look, he's been in position for, what, just shy of 2 years. And it's very difficult to determine what he's done well and what he's done badly. But Monday is supposed to be about celebrating and recognising players from both sides of the game, male and female. And what I saw was a very heavily dominated male audience with a lot of, let's be honest, wives and girlfriends and partners that were there. And I didn't see an awful lot of representation from the women's game. And for me, that is a poor indictment on FIFA. That is a poor indictment on the awards. They spent a lot of money. You said, you know, I would know more about logistics and things like that. It was at the London Palladium in the centre of London in Soho. No, this is a prime location. It was. I went to go to the awards, mate. I'm not going to go into it, but for one reason or another, I didn't get in. But it was absolute chaos outside the London Palladium and the area where the players were coming in. You know, people knew that the likes of Cristiano Ronaldo and Lionel Messi were going to be in London. But the representation from the women's game was really, really poor. And the fact that people like Emma Hayes, who were nominated, didn't even get invited, that is a massive oversight. And I don't really know why FIFA have gone down that route. And actually, as well, there were members of the public, supporters of the game, in the upper tier at the London Palladium as well. Now, absolutely no issue with supporters and fans of the game being able to attend the event, but at the expense of players from the women's game, that's where a lot of my issue lies. And I think that FIFA really didn't do themselves any favour in trying to convince us that they're taking women's football seriously at the moment.
Well, I think, you know, this kind of brings one phrase to mind. You were saying about how, you know, Infantino has been in the position for close to a couple of years now, and we haven't seen a whole lot of negative, but we haven't seen a whole lot of progression. So in my mind, I think this one thing: talk is cheap. Now you have to back it up. You said he talked about the fact that, you know, he was, you know, having discussions with former and current women's players about trying to progress the game. Well, Gianni, mate, when's it going to come? When are we going to see it? When are we going to start to see changes in, you know, making the Women's World Cup more of a, not that it isn't already a showcase event, but a showcase event that FIFA will put out just as much of the materials, marketing, finance it as equally as the men's tournament or close to it as humanly possible. You know, make this event that you just had a couple of days ago equal to for all parties, and he didn't. So, yeah, talk is cheap right now. You have to start doing a little bit more.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure Gianni Infantino isn't the one doing the logistics and the inviting, so I can't point the finger for that, but I completely agree with what you've just said. And again, this isn't about bashing FIFA. I can tell you now, we've said it on this show before, there are some really good people working at FIFA. We know one of them, Alex Stone. Unfortunately, Alex isn't actually in England for the awards. He's actually in India with the men's under-17 World Cup going on. This is the other thing as well. There is a youth tournament going on as well. So a lot of the people who work for FIFA, who would have been doing some good work at the awards, Alex being one of them, wasn't actually there because he's at a tournament in India. So, you know, as I said, arranged in the middle of a FIFA window for the women and arranged while a youth tournament is going on in India. So you're pulling resources away from the awards in the first place. So, yeah, difficult and really disappointing that we have to talk about the negatives of the awards, because there was, as I said, a couple of positives in that Lieke Martins was the rightful winner. There was a lot of debate about Carly Lloyd and Dana Castellanos being on the list, and let's be honest, rightfully so. But when you look at it, the two individuals that won were the correct winners, weren't they?
Oh, absolutely. And I think I saw the vote for the coaches one more so than anything else. And I mean, you look at how, you know, strongly the support was for Serena Wiegman to win that. I think she received nearly a third of the entire vote, and that's coming across all parties. I mean, that's impressive. I mean, usually what a winner of some award like this maybe will scratch the surface with 18%, maybe 17 or 16. She got a third of the votes. That is, you know, speaking a lot in and of itself. And with Lieke winning, I think, you know, of this group, there was not so much more of celebration for those on social media, but I think it was more of a consensus sigh of relief, knowing that, well, yeah, FIFA this year, of the group that was in the final three, they picked the right one. And, you know, I think if you stacked it still with our selection of the top three, I think still Lieke wins that award regardless, because she had a phenomenal tournament. Excellent club season, excellent work for the national team as well outside of just the Euros, and she got rewarded with a big contract to go play with Barcelona. So yeah, I think it's deserving and it's the right decision.
Yeah, totally agree. Congratulations to Lieke Martin and Serena Wiegman for their awards. I think, as we say, definitely the rightful winners on the night. I don't want to talk about the player percentage voting, mate, because I saw Sam Kerr with less than 5% of the vote and it just made me roll my eyes. So I think we'll leave that one there. One thing that did also happen for the Dutch team this week is that they were knighted, weren't they? That was something that you tweeted out on the day of recording. That one looked interesting. There was a nice video from Jackie Groenen. Do you want to give a bit more detail on that one?
So it's a pretty cool thing to see, and something that I've seen actually a couple of times within Dutch sport. Personally, I know because I'm a big New York Yankees supporter. Yes, this has been a very trialing last few days after our team been eliminated. More on that on another day. But the country of the Netherlands often, not often, but sometimes rewards their national teams that perform well on international stage and represents the true beliefs and the ideals of the country by making them a knight in the Order of Orange Nassau. So the Netherlands baseball team back in 2011, I believe, was knighted after they won their version of the World Cup over Cuba, which was a massive upset. And then with the Netherlands women's team winning the Euros, the entire team got knighted earlier on the day of recording. So pretty cool thing coming about, especially with the Dutch. And, you know, again, they were a team that, as you saw firsthand, Kieran, they won the hearts of an entire nation. They beat the best in that tournament, and they're getting the proper due rewards for it.
Absolutely, absolutely. And sticking with them, they returned to World Cup qualifying this week, which meant we saw the team back on the field and we saw the fans dancing in the street again, which was amazing to see, carrying on from what we saw at the Euros. Narrow 1-0 victory over Norway. It was again a close game. Maren Mjelde missed a penalty in the second half, but Vivian Miedema popped up in the 93rd minute to score the winner in front of a very, very big sold-out crowd. Starting off World Cup qualifying where they left off with European Championship victory, that was, I think, it showed the character of the team, didn't it, JJ? We saw them steamroller a lot of teams in the Euros with the attacking play that they had. Not giving up and fighting through to the end was an example of how this team can also play when the pressure's on a little bit, isn't it? Because they're not underdogs anymore. They are a team that people are taking seriously, and that comes with pressure, doesn't it?
In my opinion, I think they're a favorite right now. I mean, you look at trends. I'm a big believer, and I've said this before, in trends. You look at results that happened over the past, you know, 12 to 18 months. I think my one knock on them was not winning that group to get to the Olympics outright. And then they had a long time to sit around between a major competition. That was my little worry for them before the Euros, but they went through, not steamrolled the competition, but they came through flyingly. And now they've carried forward. And you look at this group that they're in for qualifying, that is not an easy group to navigate, Kieran. We already know Norway, their class on their day. Ireland is a team that you can't take too lightly because you know that they're going to steal points. Trips to Northern Ireland and Slovakia are not going to be easy ones to navigate either. You know, there is a chance if you falter on one or two occasions that you might not even get into the playoff round out of this group. And that goes the same for Norway and Ireland as well. So, yeah, not the ideal result that they wanted, just with a 1-0 victory with the goal in the 93rd minute. But they did the job. Now they're moving forward. And, you know, this is a team that's also just in a little bit of transition as well. They did have a few players not available, a couple of players no longer now, you know, going to be really focusing on the international side of things, just more on the club side. So, yeah, this is a team that's, again, at the top, they're in transition, but on their day, they could truly be one of the best in the world.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that. I wouldn't disagree. All right, well, let's stick with World Cup qualifying. We can look at some of the fixtures that have taken place over the last few days. Too many for us to go through on an individual basis, but trying to pick out a few of the kind of key results. I think the big one for me, JJ, we saw Iceland win the hearts of people in the men's Euro 2016. We saw that continue into the women's Euro 2017, despite the team not being able to get out of the group. They went to Germany and won 3-2 in one of their first World Cup qualifiers. Dagny Brynja's daughter had a day. She got two goals and an assist. To go to Germany and win so early on in the qualification group, unfortunately, they did follow that up with a, I guess you could say, a slightly disappointing 1-1 draw in the Czech Republic. But to go to Germany and win in the way that they did, that makes a huge statement about Iceland and shows that this team was no fluke getting to the Euros. This team means business.
Well, I think we all kind of agreed in the sense with Iceland's performance in the Euros. It was a little bit hard done against them. They had a couple of bad bounces go their way. Sure, that last match that they had where they kind of really fell flat on their faces against Austria, that wasn't the true you know, kind of bar that they have, but they're a team similar to a lot of others. They are class. They have a lot of young players that are now starting to show their true colors on the senior level. And, you know, come the day, they can get the result. You say that it's kind of a let off with their result against the Czech Republic. I look at it two ends. First off, it's a dud because you need to get points after you knock off a big team like that against Germany, because let's face it, you know, the Germans in any type of qualification, they're not only going to win almost every one of their games, but they are going to score a heap loads of goals. And especially when you have teams like Slovenia and the Faroe Islands in your group, expect them to be winning 6-7-8-0. So you get a result against Germany, you need to go to Czech Republic and you have to get 3 points. However, I look at it on the opposite end, they had the rare feat of trying to pick up 6 points on the road in one window. You usually have a home match and a road match, or just a home match in one window, a road match to follow in the next. But they had to do it away from home both times. Let's face it, that's a pretty long trip for the Icelandic national team, going from their home base to Germany, then not a massive length on the second leg to Czech Republic, but still it is a little bit of travel. And yeah, that's where I can give them a little bit of a pass there. But yeah, you kind of see that as one and the other. But I think for Iceland, you know, it would have been questionable to see because, again, that Faroe Islands group, you know, you do take off the results against the fifth-place team. Getting points against Germany is a big plus to get them in the second-place playoff.
Yeah, without question. Big, big win for Iceland and obviously hugely disappointing for Germany. And they were clearly hurting. They went and smashed up the Faroe Islands 11-0 in their next fixture. When you scroll down the FIFA Women's World Cup qualifying results list, JJ, you see a score and a score and a score and a score, and then you see a blank between Sweden and Denmark, which was supposed to take place at the end of last week. Unfortunately, despite it appearing that there had been a conclusion to the dispute between the Danish Federation and the players, that wasn't the case, and there seemed to be a bit of a U-turn. And unfortunately, Sweden against Denmark was postponed. We're still waiting for what the outcome will be on that. UEFA, I understand, have opened proceedings against Denmark because they were unable to fulfil the fixture. Sweden players have gone onto social media saying, we don't want the Danish players punished. They've been punished enough. I've seen Kosovari Aslani, Hedvig Lindahl, Magdalena Eriksson all saying, we want the game rearranged. Denmark did play the second fixture against Croatia. They got a 4-0 win away, but it looks like Denmark could potentially be punished for not fulfilling that fixture with Sweden. It's likely, if they are going to be punished, that Sweden will be handed a 3-0 victory, which is often the case. I personally, mate, I really hope that fixture can be rearranged. Number one, as the Swedish players have said, the Danish players have been punished enough. But number two, Sweden-Denmark's always going to be a fun fixture. So I'm sure you're in agreement. I hope that one can get sorted.
Yeah, I agree with you in the sense for the players, they deserve it. Though I'm also a believer in the rules, you know, in the sense, and again, my personal standpoint is I'm with the players. They need to deserve, or they deserve to get what they're asking for not only their payment, but as well as benefits, to really, you know, be true representatives of their nation. But at the same time, this is a knock against the DBU to not get the job done before you have a World Cup qualifier. I said it the last time that we had a podcast recording where, you know, if they can't turn up, then yeah, you know, you lose the 3 points, you lose the decision. Those are the rules, and you kind of have to go on. Is it unfortunate? Yes, but we've seen a lot in men's football before where teams get docked points or teams are forced to play in front of empty houses, and I'm a believer in that as well. So half-hearted, but if you're going to ask me for like what I truly believe, yes, the players deserve the replay, but I can understand why UEFA is opening up this investigation into it, especially because you know, Denmark somehow then were able to play their second match against Croatia just a few days afterwards. So that's where it gets a little fishy. I hope that it, you know, they get it rescheduled. So as you said, a very good match always between those two sides, but then I can also understand the opposite side of things as well.
Yeah, of course. You know, like you say, if the DBU aren't going to be able to come to a conclusion, then, you know, you kind of feel that they're the ones that should be punished. But at the same time, yeah, I would like to see that fixture rearranged and the players have the opportunity to play out 90 minutes and get a result on the board. But we should stick with Sweden because despite not being able to play that game, they did have a home match against Hungary. They won 5-0. Scoreline, not hugely significant. You'd expect Sweden to overcome Hungary. But massive shout out for goalkeeper Hedvig Lindahl, 144th cap for her country. She overtook Swedish legend Thomas Ravelli as the most capped Swedish goalkeeper, male or female. You come across Hedvig, mate, you look at her on social media, the way she comes across. I've had the opportunity not to do any kind of one-to-one interview, but in media scrums after Chelsea games and other Sweden games that I've attended in the World Cup and others. She comes across incredibly well. Model professional, does charity work, fundraising to try and raise awareness about certain causes. Absolutely delighted for her, mate. Real, real role model for the women's game.
Oh, absolutely. She's one of those players that, you know, young girls across Sweden, they should be looking up at her in the sense that how she carries herself, like you said, both on the field, off the field, in the media. You know, just everything is class about her, and I'm with you. Huge plaudits to her to getting 144 caps, because let's face it, that is a lot of time representing your national team over a big stretch. It's not like to say that Sweden plays the same amount of matches that the United States women's teams do on a yearly basis. They play their qualifiers, get a couple of friendlies in there, a tournament, and you move on. That is a long-standing goalkeeper and one that definitely deserves, you know, all good things for the rest of her career as well, because guess what? She's still pretty good in between the sticks, and no doubt she's going to be getting Sweden back into more major competitions.
Yeah. Big congrats to Hedvig Lindahl. Really, really pleased for her. And let's be frank, she's not done yet. She's going to win a lot more caps, so she's going to pull away from Thomas Ravelli, and it's going to take a very successful goalkeeper in the future to overtake her. But looking at some of the other results, mate, Scotland under Shelley Kerr now got two good wins. They won 2-1 in Belarus. They then followed that up with a 5-0 win over Albania. Saw a very, very good goal. I think it was from Claire Emsley, Manchester City forward. I think she's going to prove a very, very useful player for Scotland. Can't believe she didn't go to the Euros. That was a real surprise that she wasn't selected. Two wins for Belgium as well. One in Portugal. I think it was Tina de Gagne with a goal there, and late winner over Romania, slightly closer game, 3-2. I think Tessa Rullart scored a late one there. But anything stand up for you, mate? Spain won 6-0 in Israel. Wales got a good result in Russia. You know, not easy to go away to Russia. And Wales, we know, probably fighting for second place behind England with Russia. So to go there and get a 0-0 draw, I think is a huge positive. Now what they need to do is they need to build on that. It might be that they don't pick up any points against England, but if they can get points against the rest of the group, you're talking about a potential second place finish and potential playoff place.
Yeah, that was a pretty challenging week for Wales, to say the least, because, you know, you look at their last two matches right now, they've gone away to Kazakhstan, get a result, away to Russia, get a result. As you know a lot more than I do, those are not easy flights to take. And you got to give a lot of credit to their goalkeeper, and Laura O'Sullivan, hanging tough, had to face a lot of shots in that match against Russia, but she was able to stand firm. And like you said, Wales is a team that they're going to be fighting for second place to get through the playoff rounds. But they're a team that I think could very well, fight for that last spot in European qualifying and get themselves into a major competition, because they're a team that has a lot of class. Obviously, you know, we know a lot about Jess Fishlock. She's done it all here in the U.S., has done it all pretty much everywhere else. But there are a lot of good players on that team that deserve the big stage. So, yeah, that's a good one for them. Kind of scanning up and down, I think you pretty much covered them all. I think that Belgium match away to Portugal, I was curious to see how Portugal would respond after making it, you know, through to the Euros and actually giving a nice account of themselves in the competition as well, but not an ideal start in a group that I think they could probably do well in. Got to give credit to Italy picking up a result there, 1-3-0 home to Romania. And I think that just about does it. I think we've covered just about every of it.
Yeah, just another one. Republic of Ireland winning 2-0 in Slovakia. That's 2 out of 2 for Colin Bell. Won 2-0 away at Northern Ireland in their previous fixtures, so they've started the group stage as well. Just very quickly going back to Wales, big shout out for a former guest on the show, Helen Ward, good friend of mine, returned to the Wales squad 6 weeks after giving birth to her second child. Hells, you are crazy, but that is a hell of an achievement to be playing international football 6 weeks after you've given birth to your second child. So big thumbs up to Helen. JJ, we'll have a quick break and then we'll come back. We've got to talk about a managerial departure in the FAWSL.
Women's Soccer Zone. Follow the show on Twitter at WOSO Zone.
So JJ, on a recent show, we talked about Arsenal women head coach Pedro Martinez Losa. We said that he was under a little bit of pressure after some indifferent results. They lost 5-2 away at Manchester City last time out. They, in the league, drew 1-1 at home with Bristol City. On the day of recording, it's been announced that Pedro Losa has left the club after 3 years, won the FA Cup and the Continental Cup in his time at Arsenal. Two trophies will mean that he leaves with a couple of gold stars next to his name, but unfortunately with the resources that have been thrown at the club, the money invested into the club, and the fact that unfortunately for Arsenal, Manchester City and Chelsea have overtaken them in the last few years, it's probably the right decision, isn't it? And it's time for someone else to take the reins and try and get that club back to the top where they were for so long.
Yeah, you have to at this point. I mean, as you said, this team and Arsenal women, they've had so much put into the club. They've gotten, you know, pretty much riches of loads of international talent to, influence their side. They've had to given up a lot of good players as well, because let's just face it, you can't keep everybody happy. And you have to allow those younger players to get, first team minutes and opportunities. But with that being said, I think you and I were in agreement that this has to be the year that Arsenal get themselves back into Champions League, because if they don't, it could be for a very long time, because let's face it, Manchester City will continue to add to their stock of players. Chelsea will continue to add. Liverpool, they're going to find a way back in. There are teams that are climbing the ladder right now, and for the longest time, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, I think it was Arsenal really was that top tier. Then you had Chelsea, and this is before Manchester City came in. Then you had everybody else. Now that gap has not only been closed, Arsenal have been surpassed, and they need to do it now, or they're going to face not consequences, but they're going to face some real issues coming down the road. They need a manager, not to say to get the job done, because as you said, Pedro Losa got a couple of trophies, and if you leave any job by winning competitions, then you've done something right, and he has. But the league is number one priority this year. He hasn't gotten the job done there yet, so you have to go find someone who will.
Yeah, it's interesting. You're right. You win trophies, you leave your mark on a club without question. But the reality is that Arsenal haven't had Champions League football now for a few years, and that's where they want to be. That's where, if you look at the squad, that's where they belong. But you have to earn that right. You don't automatically gain a place in that competition just because of your history and because of how successful you've been in the past. And the problem, I think, for Pedro is that his squad, pretty much in the time that he's been at Arsenal, has been too big. He's had too many pieces to play with. He hasn't figured out what his best team is or what his best formation is. When he has had his best team out, I'm not quite sure that he's managed to kind of play them in the right way or the right style. And I've seen an incredibly talented group of players almost struggle against teams that are, with the absolute utmost respect, far inferior in terms of the number of internationals that they've got, the number of experienced players that they've got. And you kind of think to yourself, well why? The talent is there, and unfortunately, if the talent is unable to produce the goods, then you have to kind of question the coaching and the way that they've been set up. And I really like Pedro, get on really well with him, always a pleasure to speak to post-match, but I think it's the right decision. In fact, I know it's the right decision. I looked at the players in the Bristol game, and when you compare the value of the players on the Arsenal side in terms of international caps and international experience compared to a very young, determined and dogged Bristol side, Bristol held their own, and Arsenal should be winning that game comfortably. And I think that really showed the struggles that Pedro Losa was having in trying to get the best out of his players. And therefore, Arsenal have now decided that it's time for him to move on, and they get someone else in.
Yeah, pretty much. Now, I think the real question, Kieran, is, who's going to be the name that's going to pop up first? I mean, I know, obviously, a lot of people are going to be saying, well, shouldn't this be Kelly Smith's time to take over the club that she did so much for? That's a real question, and I think there are a lot of good managers out there. But I'm curious to hear, I know it's obviously very early in the process, but who's going to be the one that could take the reins? Because again, it's short turnaround, because the matches are going to start to come thick and fast over the next few weeks.
Yeah, well, they've got a game this coming weekend, weekend ahead of us recording. They play Everton Ladies, and assistant coach Ismael Garcia is going to be taking that game and probably the next few until they get someone in permanently. I can tell you now, mate, rule Kelly Smith out. It's too soon for her. I'm almost certain that this is the right job at the wrong time for her. Obviously, busy being a mum at the moment. I'm still, I believe, taking her badges. I think she herself has admitted in the past that she's probably a bit inexperienced to take on a job the size of Arsenal. So I think anyone that's kind of hoping that Kelly will take the job on, I think they can, unfortunately, they can rule that one out. The honest answer is, mate, I don't know. Pedro Losa for me came a little bit left field. I didn't hear his name mentioned before he got the job at Arsenal. You know who I'd really like? I'd really like Niels Nielsen, the former Danish coach. I think he's a character. He's got good experience. He'd bring attention to the league. Another one who's available, it's slightly more left field, is Pierre Sundhage. Been linked with the Houston Dash, which incidentally is somewhere that Pedro could potentially end up, with his links to the NWSL, having been an assistant coach at the Western New York Flash in the past. There's a number of coaches. This is a very, very, very attractive job. Arsenal are backing the manager. They have an abundance of talent in that squad. They want to be back in the Champions League. They want to be back at the top of the pile. This is a really attractive job for, I think, any coach in the world of women's football, mate. I think there's only a few that maybe wouldn't be that interested. There's probably a few coaches in the NWSL who are happy with their jobs. There's probably some very well-paid coaches in some of the European and Chinese leagues. But yeah, I'm really confused. I'd be interested to know from an outsider looking in who you'd probably look at.
Yeah, I think those two names are definitely ones. I didn't even think about Nils Nilsson for that matter. It is interesting because, you know, the names that are always, you know, popping up, for people that could take this job, they've kind of, as you said, they've already been pretty happy. We obviously know that Laura Harvey is very happy with Seattle. Obviously, they're, you know, when you look at the past lineage, sure, could she come back and take the job? Yeah, but, you know, you've put so much into Seattle, so you keep her there. National team coaches, I don't know many, if any, that really want to do that way of coaching or that have coached a national team that want to go back into a club side. Yeah, I don't know. This is a tough one. But like you said, I think this is one that pretty much anybody who's in the women's game already is going to, if they want to throw their name into the hat, they will. But it's going to really come down to Arsenal and finding out who's going to be the perfect fit for this group. As you said, there's a lot of players out there and a lot of players that want happy time on the field. And you've got to really find someone who can balance all that and put it together.
Yeah, I genuinely think it could be a coach from outside England. I think it's probably going to be an overseas coach. It might even be an English coach working in another country. I don't think Laura Harvey will come back. I think, as you say, Laura Harvey is very happy at Seattle. I think, you know, I still think Laura should be given the England job, but, you know, that's not for me to decide. Obviously, the England interviews are due to take place at the beginning of December. You know, if you were to talk about an international coach and a young international coach who potentially would be a good shout, I really like what Freyr Alexandersson has done with Iceland. I think he would be a great shout. I don't think he would leave his role because, as you say, do you want to go from a country to a club? But as I said, Arsenal is an attractive proposition. You know, they pay well. They've got an abundance of talent in the squad, as I've already said. I would look at someone like Freyr Alexandersson. And, you know, there are plenty of coaches out there as well, you know, who would be very, very interested in this role. You know, I'd love to see more female coaches in the top division. I think that would be really important. I really don't know, mate. It's a really difficult one. But look, big best wishes to Pedro Losa. He said in his departing message that he and his partner are due to welcome a baby into the world. So, you know, he's got dad duties to look forward to, but, you know, hope he lands on his feet somewhere else because, as I say, always a pleasure to speak to after matches, and maybe he will end up, as I already said, in the NWSL, and that, JJ, is really where we should try and finish off because the season finished last week or 10 days ago, and we said on the last show that we would try and hand out some awards and do a little bit of a review. We're not going to do a review of the season now. We'll probably do a full show with looking back at the season, our high points, low points and things like that. But since we recorded our last show, all of the individual awards have now been allocated. So it'd be worth us having a little chat about who we feel should have won the awards. So we know who got the Golden Boot. It was Sam Kerr. The next award was, I think, Goalkeeper of the Year, and that went to Adriana Franch of the Portland Thorns. Did you have any disagreement with that, mate? And if so, who did you go for?
I'm just trying to pull up that full list right now, but I, you know, for me, Kieran, I think they pretty much got about everybody right. I mean, I had Ashley Hatch as my Rookie of the Year. I know, obviously, a lot of people had a few other options. Obviously, you know, you look at Mallory Pugh as somebody who could have very well have won it. You had maybe some players who don't always show the flashiest of moments on the field, but they're solid professionals and did really well in their first season. I mean, Christina Gibbons, I thought, did really well this season. Maggie Doherty Howard definitely deserves a shout as well. But I think Hatch, probably the best of the bunch for me in that rookie spot. Adriana French, I mean, she set the record this year for most clean sheets in 1 year. And usually, for me as a goalkeeper, yeah, if you're posting up goose egg after goose egg, then you're doing something right. Obviously, a lot of that is down to defense in front of you. But as a keeper, guess what? Your job is to come and make the save when you're called upon. So, yeah, I think those are right. I think I remember you and I were talking off air before this. Maybe could have been swayed a little bit by the defender. Wanted to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I it was a toss-up for me. For defender, I know Abby Dahlkemper won it, and I'm a big fan of Abby Dahlkemper. I've interviewed her a few times, comes across incredibly well. I think it was between her and Emily Menges. I probably would agree that Abby Dahlkemper was the best of the bunch, but Emily Menges a close second for me. I thought Emily Sonnet was very good. I think Richard Farley, who's a fellow NWSL media member, I think he made a great shout with Kelly O'Hara. You know, people, I think, kind of forgot about her a little bit because sometimes she plays in defence, sometimes she plays a little bit further forward. Thought she was brilliant for Sky Blue this season. Thought she was absolutely excellent. But yeah, I'm with you. I think Adriana Fanch for goalkeeper of the year was a no-brainer. Abby Dahlkemper for defender of the year. I had Christina Gibbons as my rookie of the year, but as I said to you before recording, I'm not upset about Ashley Hatch being rookie of the year. She was, after a slow start where she wasn't getting many minutes, was excellent for the North Carolina Courage. And then MVP, there wasn't really a contest, was there? I say there wasn't really a contest. That's unfair, because while Sam Kerr set the NWSL goal scoring record for the season and overall, I think Marta was scintillating this year, mate. That relationship that she had with Alex Morgan and the way that she came into the NWSL and just pulled Orlando from, I think if I remember rightly, they had a pretty poor start to the season. She came in and, you know, when Alex Morgan returned from Lyon and got herself fit, those two were incredible. And I think Sam Kerr was the rightful winner of the MVP, but I don't think Marta was far behind her.
No, I don't think she was either. But actually, personally, for me, yeah, I agree with, obviously, Kerr winning. I think Marta was phenomenal. But I love the season that Sam Mewis had. Yeah. I mean, she is one of those players that I think almost match in, match out, you can count on her to do X. And not only she would do that, but she would raise it to another level. Class on the ball, you know, with her height, she can win nearly every duel in the air. She's very adept to stopping teams breaking on the counter, then launching her own counter the other way. And boy, she can hit them from distance as well. And I mean, you know, we can make obviously cases for the other two and the finalists, which have been Kristen Press and Megan Rapinoe, who also had a very good year on the goal scoring front. A little bit shame due to the fact that missed some time with injury. But yeah, I actually had Mewis. People are probably going to yell at me for this, but I had Sam Mewis ahead of Marta on my top three, and I had Kerr obviously as the one. But yeah, I mean, like you said, there's a lot of good things this year. I think defender wise I also gave Allie Krieger, who's in the final list, she was phenomenal this year. You know, again, continuing as that kind of rampaging outside back, turning into a midfielder at times, I thought she did quite well. And now on the opposite side, you had Steph Catley, had a very good season too. And you know, we can't even forget in the net as well, obviously we mentioned with Adriana French, but Kaylin Rowland was actually pretty good this year as well. I mean, you know, she kind of split the duties with Sabrina D'Angelo, and that might go against some people a little bit, but I think she definitely deserved it as well. So, you know, for me, a lot of talking points for everybody, but I think you and I are in agreement that pretty much everybody who got named winners were all in agreement with.
I cannot echo your sentiments enough on Sam Mewis. I think I said it in an article or a tweet recently that for me, Sam Mewis's stock probably grew more than anyone this season. She is, for me, the complete midfielder. As you said, breaks up play, charges forward, can support the front players, can chip in with goals. We saw two goals for the United States at the weekend, didn't we, against South Korea in that 6-0 win at their home stadium in Kerry. I think if Sam continues, and I did put this out on a tweet, I think if Sam continues the way that she does, if the FIFA panel that selects the 10 players has been watching her, she could be one of the 10 finalists for FIFA Best Player of the Year next year, because she has been absolutely phenomenal. And I do want to give a shout out to her midfield partner, McCall Zaboni, because she was phenomenal this season as well. And she absolutely warranted the call up that she got for the US women's national team at the weekend, coming on as a sub to make her debut in the 6-0 win over South Korea. I don't think there was probably a more popular player that people will have said deserved a cap and a debut than McCall, not just because of what she's done this season, but for what she's done for US women's soccer, playing in the WPS and being a great representative and ambassador for the NWSL. I know she doesn't float everyone's boat in the way that she plays. She's aggressive. She likes a tackle. But in terms of how she's performed and how she's represented this league, I thought it was great to see her do well for North Carolina Courage, and great to see her get a cap for the US women's national team as well.
Well, I think it kind of came with the territory, right? You play the game in North Carolina, a place where, you know, even she grew this year more as a player than any other season as a professional here stateside. And yeah, deserved 100%. I think, you know, it's surprising to a lot of people how she didn't get called up a lot sooner. You know, there, who knows what the reason could have been. Obviously, we've had a number of coaches take over the team while she's been a professional. Obviously now, you know, playing for Jill Ellis, who, by the way, was her coach in college as well at UCLA. But hey, you know, she deserves it. I hope that this is not one of those swan song one and done type moments, that she gets called back in on more of an occasion. We could say that about a number of different professionals. I know that Lou Barnes has been called into a few camps, but hasn't really seen the field. Happened with a couple of other players as well. But man, I really hope that we see Zaboni, not maybe in the number 25 jersey, because let's face it, no one likes a squad number outside of the roster that was given. But yeah, hopefully we see Zaboni on the field with the national team and playing good minutes as well, not just one to fill out a roster, but playing some good minutes in years to come.
Yeah, completely agree. Completely agree. And I think that's probably a nice way to finish this episode, JJ. Lots of stuff covered, lots of stuff we probably could have covered and just don't have the time to do, but appreciate your time as always, mate.
Absolutely.
And listeners, thank you so much. Always appreciate you tuning in. If you wish to contact us, you can do. We're on Twitter on @WosoZone. You can email us on WosoZone@gmail.com. You can listen to the show on iTunes and on womenssoccerzone.com, where we also have, of course, written content from some of our writers. Do visit the website, do comment on any articles you wish to, and of course, do get in contact with us with any feedback on the show. Thanks as always for taking the time to listen to us. Until next time, take care of yourselves and bye-bye.